Good evening. I'd like to call this meeting to order. Today is Tuesday, May 5th, 2015. It's 6:30 p.m. We're at the Palm Coast Community Center for the regularly scheduled meeting of the Palm Coast City Council. For those of you who are able, please rise and join me in a Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Roll call, please.
Mayor
Nelson.
Here. Vice Mayor
McGuire.
Here.
Councilmember DeLorenzo.
Here.
Councilmember
Nobile. Here.
Councilmember Shipley.
Here.
Mayor, all members are present.
Thank you very much. The first item on our agenda is the approval of the minutes of the April 1st Council meeting and the April 28th Council workshop. Are there any additions, corrections, or is there a motion for approval?
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries that objection. Agenda item number two, a proclamation recognizing May as Drug Court Month. Mike Greenier, I believe, is going to accept.
Whereas drug courts are an effective tool for reducing substance abuse and crime in our criminal justice system, and whereas, for more than 25 years, drug courts have been restoring lives, reuniting families, and making communities across the nation safe through 2,840 operational drug courts, and whereas, drug courts facilitate community-wide partnerships, bringing together public safety and public health professionals in the fight against drug abuse and criminality, and whereas, research shows that drug courts are demonstratively effective in significantly improve substance abuse treatment outcomes, substantially reduce drug abuse and crime, and do so at a lower cost than any other justice strategy. And whereas, Flagler County Adult Drug Court began in 2006, and 106 people have graduated from the program. And whereas, 75% of Flagler County Adult Drug Court graduates have no new felony charges, and 92% of graduates had no new drug charges. And whereas, the judges, attorneys, treatment and rehabilitation professionals, court personnel, and other dedicated to drug courts and similar programs are healing families in this community. And whereas, the City Council of the City of Palm Coast recognizes the successful work of the practitioners and drug court participants to reduce the impact of drug abuse in our community. Now, therefore, be it proclaimed that the City Council of the City of Palm Coast does hereby recognize May 2015 as Drug Court Month and urges all citizens to recognize the significant contributions of drug courts and congratulate this year's drug court graduates. Signed this 5th day of May 2015, City of Palm Coast, John Netz, Mayor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. My name is Mike Greenier. I'm the drug court coordinator here in Flagler County. And the stats here are really staggering. If you consider that the people that get arrested don't go through drug court, they recidivate about 75% of the time. And from the stats here shows, it's about 25 for those who go through drug court. Huge, huge difference. And certainly makes a great difference, not just to these people, but to their families. Drug court is run by the leader of the team, if you will, is Judge Walsh, who's planning on being here tonight. I would rather be here than where he is. He was doing hearings on a death penalty case in Volusia, so I would much rather be here than where he is. But he sends his apologies that he couldn't be here. And he and I both appreciate the City of Palm Coast recognizing and supporting drug courts. And we actually have a graduation coming up on May 29th. There are three people slotted to graduate. That'll bring our total of graduates up to 109 in the relatively short period of time that we've been in operation. So, again, thank you very much for Mr. Mayor and the members of the council.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
very much. For those of you who have never attended drug court, I would urge you, I would plead with you, try to make it. It's May 29th, 3 o'clock in the afternoon at the Kim Hammond Justice Center. It's on the first floor. It's a very, very moving and very emotional experience because you see, on the one hand, the devastation that drugs and drug abuse can bring to individuals and to families, and you can see the tremendous relief and improvement in the family's life as these individuals go through drug court and go through rehabilitation. It's really worth going to one. If you never go to another one, go to one and see the wonderful work that these people are doing. Agenda item number 3, proclamation recognizing May as National Safe Boating Month. I think Jack Wirtz is going to receive. Jack, if you're going to bring your colleagues up.
No, that's just me.
Okay.
Whereas recreational boating is fun and enjoyable and a popular activity on the waterways of Palm Coast, and whereas the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary Flotilla 41 in Palm Coast seeks to increase awareness of boating safety each year, kicking off its year-round effort to promote safe boating each May during National Safety Boating Week, and whereas waterways do become crowded at times, and while being a marvelous source of recreation, boating, to the unprepared, can be a risky sport. Not knowing or obeying the navigation rules or the nautical rules of the road, drinking alcohol or taking drugs while operating a boat, or choosing not to wear your life jacket can result in accidents and even tragedy. And whereas, on average, 700 people die each year in boating-related accidents in the United States, approximately 70% of those fatalities caused by drowning. And whereas the vast majority of these accidents are caused by human error or poor judgment and not by the boat, equipment, or environmental factors, and whereas a significant number of boaters who lose their lives by drowning each year would be alive today had they worn their life jackets, and whereas today's life jackets are more comfortable, more attractive, and more wearable than styles of years past, and deserve a fresh look by today's boating public. Now, therefore, be it proclaimed that the mayor and the city council of the city of Palm Coast does hereby declare May 16, 2015 through May 22, 2015 as National Safe Boating Week, and urge all citizens who boat to support the goals of the North American Safe Boating Campaign, to wear their life jackets and to practice safe boating habits. Signed this fifth day of May, 2015, City of Palm Coast, Florida, John Netz, Mayor.
There's a kind of frightening statistic that most of the people who drown during boating accidents are not wearing one of these. I don't think you'd walk out of your house not wearing your shirt. I won't get on a boat without wearing one of these. And now they become a lot more comfortable. This is very easy to put on and take off, and it's not hot. So we have a new campaign. It says, just wear it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jack. Agenda item number 4, proclamation recognizing May 10th, 2015 as World Lupus Day. I believe Debbie Blackburn is going to receive. Is Debbie here?
Hello. This is Mallory. Hi, Mallory. Whereas lupus is an autoimmune disease that can cause severe damage to the tissue and organs in the body, and in some cases death,
And whereas more than 5 million people worldwide suffer the devastating effects of the disease, and each year over 100,000 young women, men, and children are newly diagnosed with lupus, the great majority of whom are women of childbearing age. And whereas medical research efforts into lupus and the discovery of safer, more effective treatments for lupus patients are underfunded in comparison with diseases of comparable magnitude and severity. And whereas many physicians worldwide are unaware of symptoms and health effects of lupus, causing people with lupus to suffer for many years before they obtain a correct diagnosis and medical treatment. And whereas there is a deep unmet need worldwide to educate and support individuals and families affected by lupus. And whereas there is an urgent need to increase awareness in communities worldwide of the debilitating impact of lupus. Now, therefore, be it proclaimed that the Mayor and the City Council of the City of Palm Coast hereby recognize May 10, 2015, as World Lupus Day, on which lupus organizations around the globe call for increases in public and private sector funding for medical research on lupus, targeted education programs for health professionals, patients, and the public, and worldwide recognition of lupus as a significant public health issue. Signed this 5th day of May, 2015.
Thank you.
This is for you and you.
Thank you. We hope to continue raising awareness on behalf of Lupus Foundation of Florida for research and a cure. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Agenda item number 5, a proclamation recognizing May 3rd, 2015 through May 9th, 2015 as Public Service Recognition Week. Accepting will be Keith King. And I would be remiss if I didn't point out that Mr. King has recently retired from the City of Palm Coast after serving 37 years with our utility department.
Wow.
Congratulations.
Mr. Mayor, City Council, whereas Americans are served every single day by public servants at the federal, state, county, and city levels, these unsung heroes do the work that keeps our nation working. And whereas public employees take not only jobs but oaths, and whereas many public servants, including military personnel, police officers, firefighters, Border Patrol officers, embassy employees, healthcare professionals, and others risk their lives each day in service to the people of the United States and around the world. And whereas public servants include teachers, doctors, nurses, train conductors, astronauts, safety inspectors, laborers, computer technicians, social workers, and countless other occupations. Day in and day out, they provide with dignity and integrity the diverse services of their government demanded by the American people. And whereas, without these public servants at every level, continuity would be impossible in a democracy that regularly changes in leaders and elected officials. Now, therefore, be it proclaimed that the City Council of Palm Coast hereby recognize May 3rd through May 9th, 2015 as Public Service Recognition Week. All citizens are encouraged to recognize the accomplishments and contributions of government employees at all levels, federal, state, county, and city. Signed this 5th day of May, 2015, John Netz.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I've been honored to work for this city's utility department for 37 years. I've been a public servant, not much of a public speaker, so bear with me. But anyhow, and also actually lived in this community for about 3 days longer than I've worked for it. So anyhow, thank you very much. It's been my honor.
Congratulations. Agenda item number 6, presentation of the current year-to-date budget review. Since everything that we do generally has budget implications, it's important that we keep track of how we're doing. Mr. Landon?
Mayor, this is our ongoing budget series, if you will. And as you stated, we always start off this time of year to see how we are doing with the current fiscal year, because that obviously has an impact on next year. So Chris will make the little presentation and let everybody know how we're doing this year. Chris, take it over.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor and Council. Just a quick review of our budget timeline. We actually kind of start in January. We've had a number of presentations before City Council, including the previous year financial audit, the annual progress report, ongoing information about the 10-year infrastructure plan. In April, we have a whole suite of activities, one of which is the presentation of how we're doing to date after the first 6 months of the fiscal year. We go through July, August, and September with a lot of heavy lifting related to the budget. October and November, we'll kind of look back, and November and December, we'll get ready to do it all over again. So this is a summary of the city's budget for fiscal year 2015, just over $129 million. This is the revenue sources citywide. About 40% of the revenues we receive are for direct charges for services, things like water and sewer charges, our garbage pickup services, recreation fees, anything that you pay a direct fee for. That represents, again, our largest revenue source. Our second largest revenue source is what we call intergovernmental revenue. Some of that is revenue passed through from the state. A lot of it relates to grants that we receive for various projects and programs. Our third largest revenue source is actually our ad valorem taxes at 11% of our total revenues. We often find that people are kind of surprised to hear that. This particular graph shows what the actual property taxes or ad valorem taxes are used for. Over 60% of it is just for the fire and additional police protection that we provide the citizens. The balance is primarily for street and park maintenance, with a small portion that goes towards stormwater projects. This is the city's total expenditures by category. Our single largest expenditure each year is actual construction or capital outlay, anywhere from streets to ball fields to water and sewer plants. All are included in that category. Our second largest category is our operating expenses. Those are all the bits and pieces, electricity, parts, contracts that we need to keep the city running. So where are we now? So through March 31st, overall, our revenues are tracking on budget. We really haven't had any revenue issues. They're all where we expect them to be 6 months through the year, especially in all of our major operating funds, such as the general fund, the utility fund, stormwater, and our building permit fund. Here's a quick look at some specific revenue sources. The items in blue, that's our actual receipts. The yellow is what we anticipate from the budget. For the most part, we're either at or above what we budgeted for these receipts, with the exception of the state revenue sharing. That one actually gets kind of a late-in-the-year kicker from the state, but we anticipate we'll be pretty close to what the budget is. This is our building permit revenues. This is one of the of several revenue sources that we look at for how economic activity is doing within the city. It's tracking about 2% or so, 2 to 3% ahead so far of last year through March 31st. And in terms of actual permits, I know there's a lot of colors here, but this is actual numbers of permits issued. And if you just look at the trend, you can see we continue to have single-family residential permits continue to grow. So our expenditures. So where are we with our expenditures? Overall, again, all expenditures are on target, at or below budget for the year. A few individual line items. We do have some electricity charges that are trending a little bit ahead of budget, particularly one area is the sewer plant, for instance. Our fuel costs, however, have been significantly below budget. The city, just like everyone else, pays the same price for fuel, so we're also reaping the benefits of the lower fuel costs. Our capital projects right now are all on budget where we expect them to be. We did have, an unbudgeted for expense when we talk about the PA1 water control structure. That's the structure over near Mother Seton Church that has failed. We anticipate that it's going to cost about $450,000 to replace that. That was not a budgeted item, and that's something we're going to have to try to work within our current year budget.
Chris, when you say, pardon me, electric is tracking ahead of budget, that means we're spending more than we budgeted for?
In certain areas, yeah. For instance, with the wastewater treatment plant, we've had a lot of rain, unusual amounts of rain this early in the season, or what is supposed to be the dry season. It costs more money to pump all that water and process all that water. So that would be one of the areas to highlight.
Okay.
This is the kind of our what's new this year slide. This, again, City Council has seen this a few times, as has the public. This is our overall strategic planning process. There were two new kind of bubbles added to this process. One was directly tying the annual and departmental performance, both budget and through performance indicators, to the director evaluations, which now happen in January. So there's direct accountability for that process. And then the second thing is each October to kind of look back and say, okay, we had this whole year-long process. How can we improve it? Where can we make changes to it, enhancements to it? And that's built into the process now every year. So what's next? Well, we have, again, a long series of budget presentations. Our next on May 12th will be our fund review presentation, followed by on the 26th, long-term financial planning. That one will be quite exciting. At least for me. In June, we continue with a number of revenue and property tax primers. July and August, we'll work quite heavily in the various initial budget workshops. Just to highlight, in the middle of July, on the 21st there, by the end of July, we have to adopt the maximum millage rate, which is goes out on the trim notices in August. And, of course, in September, we'll adopt the final millage rate and the final budget over a couple of budget hearings to be determined in September. That's all I have. All of the quarterly results, of course, are on the website. All the presentations that we make to City Council related to the budget are on the website. And a number of the supporting documentations are available under the Finance Department on the City's website.
Thank you. Any council questions? Chris, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Part of the secret of being on budget is the prior planning that goes into creating that budget. It's quite a process. Agenda item number 7, an ordinance approving a street name change from Seminole Woods Parkway to Seminole Woods Boulevard. Mr. Reichman.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. This is an ordinance of the City of Palm Coast, Florida, officially renaming Seminole Woods Parkway to Seminole Woods Boulevard, as graphically depicted in Exhibit A to the ordinance, providing for updating and distribution of the city map, for replacement of the affected street signs, for conflicts, and providing for severability and effective date.
Thank you, Mr. Landon.
Mayor, City Council, this is just a housekeeping item. Some of the official records calls it Parkway and some call it Boulevard. So are the signs out in the street. Our emergency 911 system asks that we be consistent. And there is one address. It's Seminole Woods Boulevard. Most of the records indicate it to be Boulevard, so we're recommending making it consistent as Seminole Woods Boulevard. This is a second reading. We haven't had any comments since the first time, so we believe it's ready for final approval tonight.
Council questions? Seeing none, we open the meeting to the public. Anyone from the public wish to be heard on agenda item number 7? Seeing no one approach the podium, we'll close the public portion of the meeting. Back to council. Any questions, comments, or a motion?
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Roll call vote, please.
Vice Mayor McGuire?
Yes.
Councilmember DiLorenzo?
Yes.
Councilmember Mobile?
Yes.
Councilmember Councilmember Shipley?
Yes.
Mayor Nelson?
Yes.
Mayor, this motion passes 5-0.
Thank you very much. Agenda item number 8, an ordinance, a comprehensive plan amendment from Flagler County designation to City of Palm Coast designation as residential and industrial for a 276 plus or minus acre area known as Grand Landings North. Mr. Reichman.
Mr. Mayor, Council, this is a legislative matter. It's the Grand Landings North Comprehensive Plan Amendment, an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Palm Coast, Florida, providing for the amendment of the City of Palm Coast 2035 Comprehensive Plan, as previously amended. This is pursuant to Section 163 of Florida Statutes, amending future land use, map, or FLUM designation for 276 acres, more or less, of certain real property from residential, low-density rural estate, agriculture, and timberlands, and industrial, which are all Flagler County future land use map designations, to residential and industrial, which are City of Palm Coast future land use map designations. This is as described in more detail in the legal descriptions, which is an exhibit to this ordinance, including a note on the future land use map to limiting the lands designated as residential to 3 units per acre and a note limiting non-residential use in the industrial area to 200,000 square feet, providing for conflicts ratification of prior acts, codification, severability, and providing an effective date.
Thank you. Mr. Landon.
Mayor, City Council, this is also a second reading, and we recently annexed this area, which is off of Seminole Woods Boulevard, south of the county airport, and as a result of that annexation, we have to establish the initial comprehensive plan designation and then also zoning designation. Because it had to go to the state for their review before you could take final action on the final reading. I've asked Jose to give you a short overview to remind people as to what this action is all about. His report today will cover both this item and the next item, which has to do with zoning. So Jose, if you'll take it from here.
Sure. Good evening, Mayor, members of City Council. Jose Papa for the Community Development Department. Just to review, the Grand Landings North properties is about 276 acres located, about a mile south of State Road 100 on Seminole Woods Boulevard and west of Seminole Woods Boulevard. Previous City Council action included the annexation of this parcel, of these parcels, on February 17th. And first reading, the future land use map amendment and the proposed rezoning of the property were heard at first reading on March 3rd, 2015. And property owners include Florida Landmark Communities, LLC, and the City of Palm Coast. We own the Iroquois Canal that runs through here. And again, this is a request for comprehensive plan amendment and a zoning map amendment. Just to review what the request is, currently they have the Flagler County future land use map designations, including a 254-acre area of residential low-density rural estate, about 5 acres of industrial, and 18 acres of agriculture and timberlands. And what this amendment will do is provide them with the City of Palm Coast designation of industrial for the areas north of the canal, and residential for the areas south of the canal. So in the end, you'll have 203 acres of residentially flumed or land use designation in this area, and as well as 52 acres of industrial land. Again, this amendment was sent to the state to allow the state agencies to review it, and that included DEP, Water Management District, DOT, and the Department of Economic Opportunity, and as well as the Regional Council. No objections or recommended changes were given for the proposed comprehensive plan amendment, and so, again, this comprehensive plan amendment is ready for adoption by City Council. The second part of this action is to grant the properties with consistent and equivalent zoning designation. Currently, the properties are mainly zoned industrial, about 203 acres, with about 73 acres of what's in the county called new residential community, equivalent to our PUD, planned unit development. And the proposal here is that the zoning will be changed to, again, for those lands north of the Iroquois Canal, to be changed to high intensity industrial, IND2, about 52 acres, as well as single-family residential for the area south of the canal. And again, staff and the Planning and Land Development Regulation Board both reviewed these items and have recommended approval of both the Flume Amendment and the Zoning Map Amendment. And I did neglect to say that on the Comprehensive Plan Amendment, it includes a footnote on our comprehensive plan that would limit the development in the residential areas to 3 units per acre and limit development within the industrial lands to 200,000 square feet. And that's both in concurrence with the property owners.
Thank you. Council questions? Seeing none, we'll open the meeting to public. There are two items under consideration here. Agenda item number 8, which is the flume map, and agenda item number 9, which is a zoning. Your comments would be acceptable on either or both. Anyone from the public wish to be heard on agenda items number 8 and or 9?
Jack Carroll, Palm Coast. Can you tell me what you mean by heavy industrial?
Next speaker. Seeing no one approach the podium, we're going to close the public portion of the meeting. Jose, heavy industrial.
Sure. We have two industrial categories in the city, light industrial and heavy industrial. The difference would be that heavy industrial, from the standpoint of the floor area ratio, allows a larger footprint for should a building be built. I believe it's a 0.5 for a heavy industrial and about 0.4 for a light industrial. The other main difference are some of the permitted uses within heavy industrial. In this case, for example, the one I'm most familiar with is that heavy industrial districts permits borrow pits, but light industrial won't. So mainly the difference in typical with most zoning designations, you go from a low intensity to high intensity, it's just going to be based on really on the intensity of development you can develop and maybe some uses that should be permitted in those heavy industrial areas, but not in the light industrial areas.
I don't understand what you said.
Should I try again?
Why don't you meet with Mr. Carroll after the meeting,
sure,
and see if you can make it a little more explicit.
Sure.
Question that I have, since you're going to have so-called heavy industrial, one of the concerns that you always have in zoning is the buffering of adjoining residential properties or other kinds of properties. Could you comment on that?
Yes, sir. In this case, if I may just go to the map and look at what's surrounding the heavy industrial areas. What's surrounding it are light industrial areas and the airport. The areas to the south with the residential areas are going to be buffered by a 100-foot canal, 100-foot wide canal. So that provides you with a nice buffering between your industrial uses and your residential areas, while the heavy industrial uses would typically be not inconsistent with what would be permitted within a light industrial area, and certainly not inconsistent with the airport uses to the north and west of the property.
I will add that the property owner has indicated a desire to use his property as a borrow pit, which means digging a big lake, which our code says you have to have the heavy industrial, but it has virtually no impact on residential. It's actually a good neighbor to residential. That doesn't mean that other things couldn't happen, but the concept or idea also is that this is adjacent to the airport, and the county's proposed industrial park just south of the airport, this is very compatible with that. So we think it's a good mix in the area.
Thank you. Back to council.
I have a question.
Mr. DiLorenzo.
Jose, the footnote you mentioned that limits the types of development, how was that established? Did it have something to do with the mixes of zoning that were in Flagler County, and did you try to come to some fair number, or
sure,
how did you establish that?
Yes, sir. That was based on some fair number that we discussed with the property owners, and a lot of it has to do with the level of analysis we'd have to provide for something where you have 50 acres of industrial land. If we were to propose that at the maximum, the analysis would be that over half of that, 25 acres, could be developed. That's at the theoretical maximum. So our analysis would have to show that we can accommodate the equivalent of 25 acres of industrial uses, both in terms of traffic and in terms of the water that it would demand and the wastewater that it would produce. So bringing it to a limiting factor, which is probably more realistic due to the wetlands that are present on this site, gives it a more realistic analysis that we can provide to the state, and probably why we don't have to provide. There were no objections or questions from the state regarding the amendment.
So without the footnote, the state expects you to analyze the maximum potential,
yep,
maximum development potential. With the footnote, you've said, okay, we're going to limit this to this amount, and that's what we're basing our analysis on.
Yes, sir. Okay. We'd always have to provide the worst-case scenario for the state. And so by policy, we have limited the development potential on these properties, and by that policy, we can then provide the state with evidence that this is the maximum as we see. Not that that's really going to be the maximum that will be built, but our comp plan limits it to that maximum.
Okay, thank you.
Jose, am I to understand that the heavy industrial area has some predetermined uses already in place?
Well, there's an existing zoning on it, and that's the county designation of industrial. What it permits.
Are the owners planning something that we know of?
Yes, sir. I think they went to a planning board last month with a proposal to do a borrow pit on the site.
What size is that?
I am not familiar enough with the 14 acres, the property owners here. Yes, sir.
Okay.
Other council questions? We've already had public comment. If there are no additional questions or comments, is there a motion on agenda item number 8?
Move approval.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Roll call vote, please.
Vice Mayor McGuire?
Yes.
Councilmember DiLorenzo?
Yes.
Councilmember Nabil?
Yes.
Councilmember Shipley?
Yes.
Mayor Nets?
Yes.
Mayor, this motion passes 5-0.
Thank you very much. This brings us to agenda item number 9. We've already seen the presentation on that. This is simply the zoning map that corresponds with the future land use map. Any additional presentation? I don't think so.
Mayor, the attorney has to read it. It is.
Oh, I keep forgetting that when we get these packages. Mr. Reichman.
You're going to hurt my feelings.
I'm sorry. And this is a long one, too, isn't it?
15 seconds of fame.
This is an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Palm Coast, Florida, providing for the amendment of the official zoning map as established in Section 2.06 of the City of Palm Coast Unified Land Development Code, amending the zoning designation for approximately 276 acres, subject property better known as Grand Landings North, from Industrial Plan Unit Development, or IPUD, and New Rural Communities Planned Unit Development, or NRC PUD, Flagler County designation, to Single Family Residential, or SFR1, and Heavy Industrial IND2, City of Palm Coast designation. Subject properties are more particularly depicted and described in Exhibit A, and whose parcel identification numbers are provided in Exhibit B, providing for severability, conflicts, providing for non-codification, providing for an effective date. Mr. Mayor, this is a quasi-judicial hearing, so if there have been any ex parte communications since first reading.
Are there any ex parte communications to be disclosed?
I have none.
No, sir.
Hearing none. I assume there's no additional presentation. Council, any questions on agenda item number 9? Anyone from the public wish to be heard on agenda item number 9? This is the continuation of number 8. We'll get you, Jack.
You're not telling me what I want to hear.
Let's take another shot at it.
Okay.
What is the difference between light industrial and heavy industrial?
You could put bigger buildings in a heavy industrial than light industrial.
Thank you.
And the thing that's relevant to this particular piece of property, by city ordinance, a borrow pit, where you take dirt out of the ground and use it for some other purpose, can only be done on IND2, heavy industrial. And that is what the landowner anticipates doing. So what you probably won't see a big heavy factory. You probably will see a lake filled with water. I hope that better answers your question. Anyone else in the public wish to be heard on agenda item number 9? Seeing no one approach the podium, we'll close the public portion. We'll back to council. Additional questions, comments, or a motion?
Move approval.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Roll call vote, please.
Vice Mayor McGuire?
Yes.
Councilmember DiLorenzo?
Yes.
Councilmember Nobile?
Yes.
Councilmember Shipley?
Yes.
Mayor Nenz?
Yes.
Mayor, this motion passes 5-0.
Thank you very much. Agenda item number 10. There are two vacancies on the Volunteer Firefighter Pension Fund Board, and there are two applicants for those positions, both already serving. So the action of council would be to reappoint Daniel Brazano and Charles Esposito to the Volunteer Firefighter Pension Fund Board. Is that sufficient presentation, Mr. Landon?
Sounds great. Yes.
What is the term of that?
What is the term of these appointments? Do you know offhand?
2 years.
It is 2 years,
and it's by your ordinance, it's one of the few that they can serve more than two terms because it's so specialized. And your pool, because it's volunteer firefighters, is not that large. So that's why we do that.
Other council questions? I'll accept a motion to make these two, to appoint these two individuals, reappoint these two individuals to the pension fund board.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries without objection. This brings us to the consent agenda, items 11 through 15. These are items that the council can approve in a group. However, we'll provide the opportunity for the public to comment on any one of these items, 11 through 15, individually, before we ask council if they wish to remove anything from the consent agenda for special consideration. Seeing no one approach the podium, we'll come back to council. Is there a motion on the consent agenda, items 11 through 15?
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries without objection. This brings us to the public participation portion of the meeting. This is the opportunity for the public to speak on any item not on today's agenda. Please come up to the podium, give us your name, limit your contribution to 3 minutes.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Marion Petruzzi. I'm the neighborhood watch leader and spokesperson for our group. Firstly, I want to say I'm very proud to live in the R section of Palm Coast. It saddens me that people of influence have told reporters there are feuds and racial issues going on in our neighborhood. That is far from the truth, and they have slandered the R section and its residents. This was the same tactic another person of influence tried to use when residents initially requested a fence along Ralph Carter Park. Keep in mind, the people who have spread these fabrications don't even live in the R section. I want everyone to know the majority of people who live in the R section are well-educated, good-hearted people. We all get along. We all help each other. No one cares what religion or race a person is. We are all God's children. The reason there is a fence along Ralph Carter Park is to protect residents from the non-law-abiding citizens who are doing their dealings and causing trouble in the park. These non-law-abiding citizens, approximately 15 to 20 years old, large in stature, come from outlying areas. They trespass through residents' back and side yards to reach the fence along the park. They steal mail out of our mailboxes. They curse at innocent children and adults as they come through our neighborhood. They have thrown grapefruits at residents' vehicles, making dents. If they're confronted, residents use vulgar language and give them the finger. One resident was threatened. Some of these non-law-abiding citizens walk up and down Richardson Drive on their cell phones, looking into the fenced area. It appears they make a connection with someone in the park, then climb over the fence. Most come back out in a few minutes, then walk through our properties again to return to where they came from. Some have friends in cars or trucks waiting for them on Richardson Drive. When they come back out of the park, they get in the vehicles and speed away. Does anyone really believe these individuals are climbing over the fence to go on the swings or use the park amenities? These are the same non-law-abiding citizens who have vandalized the fence, pulling down the chain link to make a large accessway into the park. These are the non-law-abiding citizens residents want to be protected from. We need a strong fence like the one we initially asked for in 2011, a fence that cannot be climbed or cut, a fence with signs reading, "Fence is city property. Do not climb. Violators will be fined." Oh, and one more thing. I want to make this clear. The non-law-abiding citizens who are vandalizing and climbing over the fence are being portrayed as nice little children just trying to get to their park or school. This is incorrect. The nice children and our grandchildren who use the park enter on Rimfire Drive. They have no need to climb over the fence as they have nothing to hide. Common sense tells us if there is no access way to Ralph Carter Park by way of Richardson Drive, all these problems will stop. Thank you all.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Good evening, George Mayo, Palm Coast. Three things I'd like to address. I was looking for Long Creek Nature Preserve and went online to find it, and you show several, maybe a dozen beautiful pictures of it with an address, but no directions. And I was wondering if you could put, not only for the parks, but possibly public buildings, when you go to something online, you would have on the top bar directions or an inset with a little map. If you click to it, it expands to make it easy. If somebody's visiting around here and they go to it, now they have to go to Google Maps to possibly find it, and they're out of your website. Number two, recently Senator Bill Nelson filed a bill in the Senate to stop the and oppose the seismic testing of the ocean floor with compressed air for oil exploration. The cities of St. Augustine, New Smyrna, Cocoa, and the Florida DEP have joined in that to oppose that. And I'm asking that the city council also maybe get in touch with his office and add their name to the list opposing the testing. You get to oil exploration, that means oil drilling rigs out there and possibly damage to marine life. We value our tourism, we value our ocean. I don't think it's necessary over here on the east coast of Palm Coast. Third, the state House of Representatives has filed a moratorium against the moratorium on fracturing. So in other words, they want to open up fracturing in the state of Florida. The governor also has given his approval for that. We know we have the best water around, and even our number one award-winning water company department might have a hard time taking care of that if we allowed fracturing and allowed our water to get contaminated. That is one resource that is very important. And the third thing is, I recently asked and concurred by Mr. McGuire to possibly have signs put up in the city of Palm Coast addressing motorcycle riders, having people be aware that there are motorcycles out and around. And I just wonder if the city has looked into that and possibly come up with something for that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next speaker.
Jack Kyle, Palm Coast. Last year, I believe it was, I made a statement at the County Commissioner's meeting, and 2 days after the statement, I was approached by one of the reporters, and he told me, he says, "Don't speak unless you have your facts." Well, I have my facts, so I'm not worried about that. But I want to say this. They shouldn't print anything in the paper unless they have the facts. And now I want to refer to the little item that says meetings for the public. And it had the city council meeting at 9 o'clock
today
at City Hall. So if they just have a word, if you don't have the facts, don't print it. There's one more thing. You think about it. You got seven people sitting up there that control everything we do. Now, I go out and I buy a house. This is an example of what you people do to us. I go out and I buy a house for $200,000. And you come along and you say, well, you really don't own the house. See, because you got to pay me taxes. And you can't do anything to your house unless we say it's okay. Now, if you want to do something on your lawn, if you want to let your grass grow and you want to go, back to nature, you can't do it. If you want to put something in the backyard and you have eight neighbors come in and complain, right? They tell you to take it down. So that's what I'm saying. You have no control over your house, right? Except to sell it. And even then, you got a problem, I think. So just to let you know what I think about it anyway. I don't know what everybody else thinks. But stay away from my house. Now, I'm going to send you a bill for maintenance of my swales. Now, the city says that they own 15% or 15 feet on my property or your property, but I have to take care of the swales. So I think I'm going to send you a bill for the swales. I think the guys that do the grass cutting, I don't know what they get, but I'll take just a portion of that. And since I'm there for 16 years, I'll just add it all up, and then you can send me a check.
Thank you. Next speaker.
How you doing? Carmichael McMillan. I have some comments about the Matanzas Woods Golf Course. Okay. For a while, some of the residents have been asking me to get involved and try to... You're the red light camera guy. Would you mind doing a petition to save our golf course? And I've ignored it. But the last council meeting, there was a gentleman that came here, and he stated the position that the residents would like to get rid of. They're ready to give up their golf course. That doesn't come in line with the messages I'm getting from the residents. They'd very much like to keep their golf course. Now, there's also another myth that there is no buyer interested in keeping that golf course and restoring it and returning it. That's also not true. I've spoken to the property owner, and he informed me that he's got multiple bids for the property above what he paid for it. The problem we have is the people who want to restore it as a golf course can only bid a certain amount. Now, if you're a developer, that property is worth far more than the folks that can keep it a golf course because the economics is different. So he's holding, from my view, he's holding out for the developer because he can get a whole lot more money. And the expectation is that you will allow that developer to drop a subdivision on there, put homes on there, okay? And the residents lose their home on the golf course. Now, we can argue back and forth about whether or not this amount of residents want to keep the golf course and this amount would like to let it go. I have a solution for that. What I'm going to do for you guys is I'm going to do my door-to-door thing. I'm going to put together a document that will have the options. And I will go door-to-door and have them sign, and we'll find out who wants to keep their golf course? Who wants to get rid of their golf course and put the park or what have you? And then I'll present. I would also do a mail list to the folks who own lots on the course so we can find out what they want. I'll gladly do that. I'm going to do that. The another issue is we apparently have a council person meeting with residents discussing this particular issue. And I had some residents come and ask me, can you get the minutes for these meetings? Because they should be public. So I would recommend that whoever that is, stop doing that. Okay? There are laws that you can't do that. Unless you're, it's not a public, you're meeting parties on an issue that's going to come before you.
And 15 seconds.
Your impartiality is gone. Also, the legal issues related to this, the city owns a golf course. The manager said that the developer is his friend. I see later on, just like Red Light Cameras, we're creating a legal nightmare if these people lose this, lose their course and their property value.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Next speaker.
Lewis McCarthy, Palm Coast. All I can say is, looking at the web, and I go quite often to look and see how the city hall is coming along, and I pull out certain proportions of it, and I can tell you, keep on keeping on. All those who don't know, and I say it again, all those who don't know, they can go on the web and go to the city's website and pull up what's current on there and find out instead of getting misinformation. Because I know people walk up to me and ask me and say, oh, are they really not doing this and they really not doing that? And I'm saying, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. And I can tell you right now, I'm very proud of whoever, the IT people who are putting it together, keep on doing it, keep it coming. It looks good. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next speaker. Next speaker. Seeing no one approach the podium, we'll close the public portion meeting. Back to council. Let's take a look at some of these items. I think, Mr. Landon, the suggestion about directions or a link to a map for city facilities, I think it's an excellent idea. I think our IT people are capable of doing that. The issues about seismic testing and or fracking, I think that's an issue that if council wants to discuss that, take any kind of position, that's an item for our workshop. The issue of a council member speaking to residents, I think someone is terribly misinformed on what the state statutes are. The state statute says that no two council members, no two members of any body, elected body, can meet without it being a noticed and publicly accessible meeting. There is nothing to prevent any individual council member from speaking to residents. In fact, that's part of what our job is.
That's right.
This is a representative form of government. Our job is to represent the citizens of our community. And the best way to do that is to speak to as many of them as you possibly can.
Mr. Mayor, not to correct you, but to add that it's no two to meet to talk about public business.
Yes. That was my presumption. It would be perfectly okay for Mr. Nobile and I to talk about the Yankees baseball team. But not if we're going to vote on it. Okay. As far as the issues of the golf course, I'm sure you can get as many petitions and as many individual positions as you want, but the reality of the matter is there is a private property owner who has certain options. Whether or not that individual has prospective buyers, the only way to tell is when there's a contract of sale and that contract is executed and there's a new owner of the property. Right now, the city's position is we're trying to facilitate a communication, if you will, between property owners, prospective purchasers, if there are any, the residents. Our goal is to get some kind of a resolution that will remove the blighted, abandoned golf course from the neighborhood and make some kind of an improvement. If it could be a golf course, we'd love that. If it is something else, we'll have to discuss that when the time comes. Right now, there's nothing before City Council to deal with other than trying to facilitate a discussion. Mr. Carroll, put your bill together for the swale. I suspect we probably won't pay you. And to say that you have no control over your home, quite the contrary. But building codes, zoning, land use codes are designed to better the entire community. I don't think anybody would want to give you carte blanche to do whatever with you please with your house, because then your taste becomes inflicted on the neighbors.
Mr. Mayor.
But we'll strike a compromise here. Mr. DiLorenzo.
I thought that cake took care of it. Your birthday cake had the swale on it and everything. I thought we're all even.
Guess not. I think I've covered most of it. The idea of a motorcycle sign.
We're going to look into the cost of that, Your Honor,
Go
ahead.
Our traffic engineer is taking a look at that and seeing what other communities do and what our options are. He did something wild and crazy and had another baby, so he's been off. But it's on his list to do.
Just a comment, and this is not to prejudice counsel one way or the other, but law-abiding citizens know the laws and don't need signs. Putting signs up does not seem to positively influence those who tend to break the law. If you put no littering signs up, people still litter. If you put no speeding signs up, people still speed. If you put signs up, look out for motorcycles, it's worth a try, but I'm not sure how effective it's going to be. Discussion by City Council of matters not on the agenda. Ms. Shipley, why don't we start with you?
I have nothing.
Mr. DiLorenzo.
No, sir.
Mr. Nobile.
Yes, one thing. In regards to Richardson Drive, I would just like some clarity as to how we ended last week at the last workshop as to what's happening next, what's coming next. Because we did talk about a fence extension, and it was thrown out there to let's put money in the budget for potential, but I'd like to know how much that's going to cost definitively, and so that we can act on it better than just saying, well, let's put money in. And I also want to understand what's the next step. What's going to happen next?
I'm prepared to address that. First of all, you know, a lot of what you hear is all about law enforcement and illegal activity, and obviously Mark Carman and the Sheriff's Office, I know he's talked to his command staff to come up with a game plan as to how to address the illegal or perceived illegal activity. The fence, I've asked our construction people to put together numbers, costs for a angle and also a tighter mesh, the smallest we can have, and they are working on that to present that back, and then the instructions was that would be something you'd consider as you consider the budget. But we're putting together those numbers so you know what those numbers are.
And just my comment about $50,000 in budget just a
grasp
of thin air. I have no idea whether that's on target, half the price, twice the price. But the point I was trying to make is that, as I said earlier in the evening, most of the actions that we take have budget implications. Right. It is far better to put them in the budget than try to scrounge it up afterwards.
Yeah. That's all I have, Mr. Mayor.
Nothing more. Discussion by the city attorney of matters not on the agenda.
Oh, boy.
Mr. Mayor and Council.
He's got a big, thick piece of paper there.
Well, you have it, too. This was something that the city received from our lobbyist and gave us a nice little preliminary end-of-session report about what's happening up in Tallahassee. Obviously not as much as a lot of people thought, but there still was a lot that was accomplished. Local preferences, I think I mentioned to you before, that actually did pass. They created a new cause of action for public property rights. And then, of course, they interestingly enough, they passed a law that made it illegal for any local government to use and operate a drone over private property. So we're going to sell our fleet of drones. We no longer will have them.
Oh, man.
That's for the newspaper, please. That is I don't want that to be perceived as anything close to the truth. As you probably also know, we're going to be meeting with Mr. Bell later this month and be reporting back to you in more detail and about some of the things that did happen up there and then, of course, some of the things that didn't happen. So just want a little foreshadowing, Mr. Mayor.
Discussion by city manager of matters not on the agenda.
Ms. Shipley asked me to report on update on a couple of issues, one of them being the Matanzas area and the abandoned golf course and then also Florida Park Drive. Let me start with Florida Park Drive. First of all, background. City Council asked us to engage a traffic engineer to look at possible solutions to the Florida Park Drive, speeding, volume type issues. And we went through a selection process and have selected what we believe is being the most qualified traffic engineer, Lasser Engineering out of Volusia County. We met with them today to discuss the issue so they could put together a scope of services and propose costs for that scope of services. They won't have that ready this week, which means can't get it on next workshop. I just want to let you know that there is progress being made and that we'll present something to City Council. If you want to pursue it, you'll have a what we call a scope of services, what they'd be looking at and what that cost would be, and you can decide whether you want to pursue that or not. That should be coming your way in a couple weeks, more like 3 weeks from tonight. The other one is the abandoned Matanzas Wood Golf Course. I gave this report to you at your workshop last week, but once again I've been asked to keep you up to date. We did meet with a representative of the property. He's a realtor, the realtor for the seller that's local here this week. He did confirm that the current owner has no intention of doing anything with the property other than selling it, better known as a flipper. He bought it with the idea to resell it. And he does have some potential buyers that they are working with, but has no contract on it at this time. Then we went on to talk about, well, in the meantime, he needs to take some steps to address some of the issues out there. First, I'll start with the clubhouse. Everybody's in agreement. The clubhouse is beyond repair and is open and is a hazard. And we are started the process to, if terminology is condemn, but it basically requiring them to demolish the old clubhouse. And that's going to be something what we'll go through the legal process. But we have informed them we're going to start that process to get the old clubhouse down at the owner's expense. We also have been in contact with the St. John's River Water Management District about the stormwater ponds and the maintenance of those. Explained to the owner representative that if it's just an aesthetic pond and it's not tied into the stormwater system, we don't have public concern about that. But as soon as you start talking about a pond that was designed to hold stormwater before it's released into the public system, we do have a concern. And that is something that is actually controlled or under the jurisdiction of the St. John's Water Management, the state, not the city. And there is a permit, and they are required to do some maintenance. And so we've asked St. John's to come in and take a look and make sure that they are meeting their maintenance obligations for the stormwater system. It's a private stormwater system, but it does dump into the public stormwater system, which impacts the whole neighborhood. The other thing that came up is trash. And we are not allowed by law, obviously, to just go walk on property and search for trash. And the trash that we hear about, you can't see from public right away. So we don't have the ability to require them to get rid of any of the trash. It's not seen by the public view. We did express a concern to the owner representative that they need to be keeping their property clean. Something else that has come up this week is trespassing, in particular trespassing with motor vehicles, and I think for the most part it's dirt bikes. And I would totally agree that having dirt bikes, first of all, if I've never ridden a dirt bike, but I could see that with a golf course that would be kind of fun. But on the other hand, if you're a resident, and also the fire hazard and everything else goes along with that. So we've asked that the property owner grant us permission to trespass anybody that is trespassing. And they've indicated that, yes, they will give the sheriff's office that ability and that they will file trespassing. We don't have that in writing yet, but that's the goal. And then the sheriff's office, because some of the people who are trespassing are saying, you can't get rid of me. And actually, it's private property. So unless the property owner says they're not allowed there, then we can't enforce, the sheriff's office can't enforce trespassing. So if they give us that in writing, that will be helpful in trying to solve that issue. The last one is mowing. And this one is probably the largest challenge, because it's, in essence, abandoned property and other abandoned property in town that doesn't have a structure on it. We allow it to go back to natural area. In this neighborhood and every neighborhood we have many vacant lots that are natural. They have indicated, once again, we don't have in writing, but that they would work with us to determine what areas could easily go back to natural areas. In other words, they have woods all around them already, and it makes a lot of sense, and what areas would make more sense to maintain better with mowing. And instead of just right now, minimum standard is mow the whole thing, we're trying to work out with something that's a little more practical. That will take a little time, but we have expertise on staff that if they will grant that permission that they've indicated verbally they will, we'll put together a plan as to what areas will be mowed and what areas will be allowed to go back in the natural vegetation. There is no firm plan as to, you know, development, et cetera, but we made it very clear that any plans to develop in people's backyards and fairways and those type of things would lead to serious opposition, and very confident the city would not support any of those. Any kind of proposal that's around the clubhouse and not the actual golf course in some of those areas, like any other vacant property in town, we stressed to them that it needed to be compatible with the neighborhood, single family, you know, not apartments, and something that hopefully, if they want to go that route, that it would not be incompatible with the neighborhood. Very preliminary. The biggest problem is in order to really move forward with this, you need that end user. And whether that's an end user that wants to turn it into a golf course again or wants to do something else with it, the current property owner has no interest in the future of the property. And so the future is hard for us to work through until there is an owner who really has interest in trying to do something in the future. And in the meantime, asking for a lot of patience, because this property owner isn't going to do anything with it.
And to be clear, we're no matter who the property is sold to, at this moment, it can only be a golf course.
Yes.
So they can't just sell it and then all of a sudden he can, you know, whoever purchases it can start doing. They've got to come before the council. We're going to have to rezone it.
Right.
Well, is that totally accurate? Are there not parcels adjacent to the golf course, contiguous to the golf course, that are zoned for development already?
I know, because I've heard many times, that area that was used as a golf course has to stay a golf course. There are, in the whole neighborhood, there are many vacant parcels that are not part of the golf course proper, and those have, there's different zoning, there's different, so my answer regarding the golf course is only that area that was specifically used for the golf course. You have a wooded area that was never part of the golf course, or may even be on golf course property, but not actually used as golf course. I'm not sure exactly where that fits in, but I don't think you'll ever see any of that happen without them having to come back for zoning approval by city council.
Okay. Thank you.
I did have one last thing to end with a very positive note. Our water boys, as they're affectionately recalled, called, are our water treatment plant operators that compete for what they call top ops. We're our state champs again. They won the state championship. It's very, very positive. It's kind of like a college bowl game speed, but it's also very serious because a lot of chemistry and a lot of questions about the serious matter of providing safe drinking water, and our guys are the best there is, and they will go on to nationals, and if they do what they normally do, they'll bring home the national championship. No pressure, though, guys, but yeah, that's all I have.
Just one follow-up comment. You know, as the county continues to struggle with the issue of water treatment plants, they might want to consider contracting with the city to operate them. We seem to have the top ops around. That being said, Mr. Vice Mayor?
Move to adjourn.
We are adjourned. Thank you very much.